The Fan on Demand. Go to fan590.com and sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. Don't worry. He'll talk slow and dumb it down for you because he thinks he has to.
You got a real talent for this, boy.
The Jeff Blair Show on Toronto Sports Radio. The Fan 590.
We're back with the Fan 590. We're going to be talking baseball this hour, specifically the Toronto Blue Jays managerial search. Apparently, it is down to three candidates. Sandy Alomar Jr., a coach with the Cleveland Indians. John Farrell, the Boston Red Sox pitching coach, and a guy whose name we'd thrown out really early in the process, and DeMarlo Hale, Red Sox bench coach. And there has been no confirmation from the Blue Jays. Obviously, general manager Alex Anthopoulos is keeping this, well, he's kept it under his hat since the process started. You know, from my point of view, Farrell's name doesn't surprise me. I'm a little surprised that the others would make it this far in the process. Nonetheless, two of them, as I said, are members of the Boston Red Sox staff. And, well, we're going to be asking you this hour. We're going to be taking your calls at 416-870-0590, star 590, 1-888-666-0590. Very simply, Sandy Alomar Jr., DeMarlo Hale, John Farrell. Does that get you excited? I mean, I'm not saying you're going to rush out to buy tickets based on who the manager is, but what do you think about that final three? And of that final three, who do you think should get it? At this time, we're pleased to be joined by the Red Sox beat writer for WEEI, Mr. Rob Bradford. Rob, thank you for joining us.
Jeff, it's my pleasure. But I would say that it's down to actually four.
Four?
I reported earlier this morning that Brian Butterfield is also a finalist.
So Brian Butterfield is a finalist for the job. So there's four. Brian Butterfield, of course, the Blue Jays' third base coach.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say the two Red Sox candidates for this job. Farrell is a guy that early on in the process, a couple of people with the Blue Jays organization had mentioned to me as a guy they thought was an outside candidate. But I had one guy tell me probably the strongest outside candidate. He's interviewed for a number of jobs, hasn't he?
He hasn't interviewed for a job.
He interviewed in Cleveland.
No. He actually never did interview. They wanted him to interview, and his thinking was, "Hey, listen, if I'm not going to take the job, I'm not going to interview."
Okay.
And Seattle and Pittsburgh were a couple of the other places, but this is a guy. He's a really interesting guy because he has a very diverse background. He was obviously a major league player. Went to Oklahoma State after to be a pitching coach for a little bit. Was a farm director for Cleveland and did a great job there by all accounts. And then he became the pitching coach for the Red Sox and basically managing what I think might be the most eclectic pitching staff in the history of the game that first year. He had with Schilling and Daisuke and Beckett and all these guys, all the young guys. So he's a very, very unique guy, a very, very intelligent guy. You can see why these clubs did want to interview him.
Now, there used to be a... teams at one point used to want to shy away from hiring pitching coaches as managers. For whatever reason, they went through a period where it was awfully hard for a pitching coach to get a job, not to get a job as a manager, or to be a serious candidate. Well, I mean, we've seen the job that Bud Black has done with the Padres. And but beyond that, what do you think? And I don't know if you've spoken to him, but what would make him interested in the Blue Jays job? John Farrell, I'm thinking of.
Well, I think that he might see it. I think he sees it as an organization that has got their act together in a lot of different ways in terms of obviously kind of building with some of the young players they've acquired over the last couple of years and what they have now. But you talk about the pitching coach and kind of the stigma that was attached in terms of hiring manager. Obviously, Bud Black went a long way in helping that, turn that tie a little bit. But this is, as I mentioned before, I think what Farrell has going for him is that he did deal with a lot of position players as the farm director. He actually was the Red Sox, I think, during Theo Epstein's brief hiatus back in 2000, after 2005 season, wanted him to at least talk about the general manager's job. So a lot of people were looking at him that way. But I think that he has a diverse enough of a background where it goes beyond just being a pitching coach. And to be honest, Jeff, if you look in the Red Sox dugout throughout the course of the year, it was John Farrell who was standing right next to Terry Francona almost at every turn. So that was interesting to me.
Rob Bradford of WEEI joins us to talk about the Jays managerial opening. DeMarlo Hale's an interesting guy. He's had a lot of field experience as manager and as coach. And I know he's a guy, again, early in the process. I think one of the things Alex Anthopoulos was very clear about, you know, behind the scenes, and if you talk to Jays people, they'll tell you, you know, I think there is, in the back of his mind, there's an idea that if you're going to compete in the American League East, if you're going to win in the American League East, you've got to have somebody who kind of understands what it's going to take to run a game in the American League East. Hale would seem to fit that mode perfectly. I mean, I would think even though Farrell is pretty close to Francona, I would think that Hale must have picked something up, and his reputation seems to be pretty good when you talk to minor league people.
Yeah, it really is. And if you look at the candidates, obviously Butterfield had some managerial experience in the minors with the Yankees organization, but Alomar and Farrell, not a lot of managerial experience. And that's one thing DeMarlo does have. He had excelled as a minor league manager, and then he was a third base coach for the Red Sox, and then he went to this past year, he became the bench coach. And DeMarlo is more of a low-key guy, but you talk to the players, and they have a tremendous amount of respect for him in terms of sitting down with him, instructing. I think in this day and age of Major League Baseball, that's almost kind of a good trait to have. It's almost be kind of a low-key guy, whereas, okay, you know what, we'll handle everything behind the scenes. This is what you did right. This is what you did wrong. You stay organized. And you know, the Red Sox have a structure in place. That's what made them successful to a certain extent. I think that DeMarlo taking over for Brad Mills as a bench coach, they didn't skip a beat. I mean, Terry Francona went out of his way numerous times to say what a great job that DeMarlo was doing as bench coach. So I think you're right, Jeff. I think that he does have an outstanding reputation around baseball. Even though you're not going to get the fire and brimstone type of guy that maybe some people want.
Right. Rob, listen, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us in the Fan 590.
Jeff, thanks a lot.
Take care. That is Rob Bradford of WEEI in Boston. He has been all over the Blue Jays managerial story. Rob has a ton of sources, certainly inside the Red Sox organization. And if John Farrell and DeMarlo Hale are finalists, as he has reported, along with Brian Butterfield and Sandy Alomar Jr., I would think you can pretty much take that as gospel. Rob Bradford does not throw stuff against the wall and hope that it sticks. 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-660-590. We are asking the question this morning in the Fan 590. You've heard it. There are four finalists, apparently, for the Blue Jays managerial job. Brian Butterfield, their third base coach, who is probably, well, was the strongest of the incumbent coaches, is a finalist, along with DeMarlo Hale, Red Sox bench coach, John Farrell, Red Sox pitching coach, and Sandy Alomar Jr., the Indians' first base coach. Interesting, of course, DeMarlo Hale, African-American, Sandy Alomar, Latino, John Farrell, Caucasian. And the reason I throw that out there is because when Alex Anthopoulos was named general manager of the Blue Jays, I mean, Bud Selig, whatever you may think of the commissioner's office, they have very serious guidelines when it comes to interviewing people for openings. Minority hiring, minority interviews are sacrosanct to Bud Selig. And I know that Selig understood why Alex Anthopoulos was named general manager of the Jays, but I've got to think that he gave them a little bit of a pass because there wasn't a wide interview process there. I've got to think that the Blue Jays will be very sure that Bud Selig knows that they have treated every minority group, every visible minority group, seriously in this process. And they're interesting candidates. Personally, I would really like to see John Farrell get the job. I think I've seen what Bud Black has done with San Diego, and the fact that, as Rob Bradford of WEEI said, John Farrell has had so much experience working with the different Red Sox pitchers, and he also seems to be a smart enough guy that he would be able to come into this organization and work with Bruce Walton, who is the pitching coach, and Rick Langford, the bullpen coach. Pitching was a Blue Jays' strength this year, and I've got to think that John Farrell would have no problem retaining those two guys. They would have no problem. He wouldn't feel like they were stepping in his toes and vice versa. It's an interesting choice. Brian Butterfield, as I said, I have to admit, of all the incumbent coaches, I think he's the only one who could manage. I don't think Nick Leyva was really given serious consideration for the job. And Nick Leyva is too tied into Cito. And I'm a little... The only reservations I have about Brian Butterfield, and I've said this, is I just don't know if you can go from being a good coach who works with players and has a relationship with players that involves as much give and take and as much good-naturedness as Butterfield has, and then carry that over into the manager's position, into a position where you have a little more authority, into a position where it's not so much trying to massage players' egos as also getting players motivated. And I've talked to Brian about that, and to his credit, Brian has said to me, you have not heard me stand up in a meeting and say what needs to be said, which is true. And I do know this for a fact. If it is Brian Butterfield, it'll be a hell of a popular move within the clubhouse. 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. So there you have it. Finalists for the Blue Jays managerial job, Sandy Alomar Jr., John Farrell, DeMarlo Hale, Brian Butterfield. Do you like those choices? Is there somebody missing? What do you need to see from the Blue Jays' new manager? Matt in Waterloo, you're on the Fan 590.
Hey, Jeff, how you doing? I think when I first saw the list, I was kind of a little deflated. I expected some bigger names, but as time's gone on and more is coming out about the candidates, I think it's a good candidate pool. The two I'd put at the top of the list are Hale and Farrell, and I'd choose Hale, partly for a reason you just stated, and that is the Blue Jays already have a strength in pitching coaching. So I think Hale brings a little different element. I think Walton and Langford cover off that area with the Jays quite nicely. And Hale does have, from what I could see from the resume, quite a bit of managerial, not just experience, but success as a minor league manager of the year in the Red Sox system. So he's the guy I'd put my vote behind.
Well, Matt, and thank you for the call. The thing about DeMarlo Hale, and I think a lot of us at the start of this process, you want to hear some sexy names. As I said, I don't think a manager sells tickets, but you wanted to hear some names that kind of grab you. And I think to the real hardcore baseball fan, John Farrell's name is hugely intriguing. And I've got to think that, from my point of view, I would prefer him of any of that group of four, but I have no idea who has the inside track.
Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Toronto Sports Radio, The Fan 590.
Did you ever have to make up your mind and pick up on one and leave the other behind? It's not often easy and not often kind. Did you ever have to make up your mind?
1021 in the Fan 590. I don't know where this song came from. We are talking about the Blue Jays and their managerial shortlist. I am Jeff Blair. And, the shortlist is down to four, according to WEEI in Boston. And another Boston website, CSN, has also been reporting the similar names. Sandy Alomar Jr., Cleveland Indians first base coach, DeMarlo Hale, Boston Red Sox bench coach, John Farrell, their pitching coach, and Brian Butterfield, the Blue Jays third base coach. Apparently the short list for the Jays managerial opening. 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. What do you think of those names? What do you think of that short list? There's no Bobby Valentine. And again, I will assume, knowing the people involved in the reporting and having, I think, an understanding of where at least one of their sources is, excuse me, that these are very accurate names. So there you have it. You have four names Any of them move you? Any of them excite you? Are you disappointed? Like I said, I mean, no Bobby Valentine. Don Baylor was interviewed, did not get the job. There's nobody really in this group that has major league managerial experience. I mean, does that mean that you think the Blue Jays managerial job, is it being treated like an entry-level job? I don't know. I want to know what you think about it. 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. We are talking Blue Jays managers on the Fan 590. Jerry in Toronto.
Hi, Jeff. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for joining us on the Fan 590.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. My favorite out of the four is Alomar, by far.
Okay.
And the reason is I think it's really important for this team to have fresh blood as a manager. I was really concerned about the Baylors and some of these guys coming in. We've got a young team. It's going to get younger. And I want to see a young manager come in that also has a lot of emotion. And I think Alomar brings those capabilities. And as a catcher, you know, he's obviously got a lot of experience in the game. And I think he's going to be great. I think we're going to...
Sorry, Jerry.
I think we're going to have to live with some things from him until for the first year or so. But he's young, and I look forward to him growing along with the team.
You're clear, Jerry. You're clearly not, and you're cutting in and out here. But I mean, you made your point, and it's a valid point. You're, you know, I think Jerry likes the fact that Alomar is a, as he says, is a fresh face. I personally find it a little refreshing that the people on this list, three of them, do not have Blue Jays ties. I mean, Alomar, I guess, does his brother, but they don't have those hardcore Blue Jays ties, which I like. And I have to admit that having Brian Butterfield in the mix as well, I mean, as I said, of all the guys on the coaching staff that who could manage, you know, there's talk about Nick Leyva. That didn't excite me. He's too associated with Cito. Butterfield would have been the guy. 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. We're asking the question on the Fan 590. You have the Blue Jays managerial shortlist. Do you like it? Is there somebody missing? Handle in North York. You're on the Fan 590.
Hey there. I think I really like Alomar. I think just due to the fact that he's got a ton of big league experience. Also, he's still a relatively young guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he can relate to the players. And I think what Ozzie Guillen did with the White Sox, potentially, who knows, maybe Alomar could do the same thing for the Jays.
And Handel, that's a great point, and I think one of the things we need to keep in mind, too, is that going forward, I think the Blue Jays are going to have a pretty heavy Latin American influence in the player base, and it certainly helps to have a guy familiar with those sensibilities as your manager. It's one of the reasons I think John Farrell is such a good candidate as well, because, you know, he replaced Dave Wallace as the Red Sox pitching coach. He had a staff. He had a Japanese pitcher. He had Josh Beckett. He had Curt Schilling. I mean, he had a lot of guys he had to deal with. He had a lot of complicated personalities. He had, you know, yes, he had Jason Varitek as his catcher to help him, but there were a lot of issues he had to deal with as a pitching coach, and he did it in that marketplace, so you know that John Farrell can handle the pressure. Now, there's a question about pitchers slash pitching coaches becoming managers. It hasn't always worked out. Joe Kerrigan, Marcel Lachman, Phil Regan. There are guys who were pitchers or pitching coaches who moved into managerial positions, and it just flat out didn't work. Bud Black has changed that. Before Bud Black, I mean, Tommy Lasorda pitched. Roger Craig, a hugely successful career. So it's not to say that pitchers or pitching coaches can't manage, but they are underrepresented in the managerial ranks in baseball. 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. We're talking the Blue Jays managerial shortlist in the Fan 590. Pete in Toronto.
Hi, Jeff. First of all, love the show. And
thank
glad,
you.
Glad you've got it. It's nice, another sort of baseball guy in there.
Thank you.
Anyways, I thought that this position would either, like, I thought Butterfield and Farrell were going to be big on this. I never thought Anthopoulos would go for the rock star. But I think I like Farrell, and I like Farrell because of his background in player development. I think with a young team, This guy's going to, you know, he's going to manage to win games, but he's also going to have an understanding of what's going to help these guys get there in the long run. And I think that's going to be key. Like, with, I mean, you know, we all have a soft spot for Cito and stuff, but, you know, how he handled Travis Snyder and stuff, a lot of Sean Green before that. A lot of us, you know, fans aren't so big on that. You know, I mean, I think, what do we got? Maybe another 4 years left of Snyder. I think if he would have gotten to play the way he should have the past couple of years, you know, maybe we'd already be talking about him as a middle of the lineup bat. And, you know, I mean, I'm sure we'll probably be able to get him for maybe a year or two, and the way they're doing, like, with Romero or something.
Right.
But it's still, you know, I mean, you want him in those, you want him in the position to be a middle of the order bat as soon as possible. But I just think that that Farrell's intriguing because of that understanding. And I think the Ladin thing is going to be, he had a big hand in that in the Red Sox system.
Right, and that'll be taken care of, frankly, Pete, because Luis Rivera, I mean, I've been told that it'll be a surprise if Luis Rivera is not on the staff. The only way I can see him not being on the staff is maybe the Jays want to keep him in the minors so he can be still be close to Hedeny Echeverria, their Cuban shortstop, who he has taken under his wing. But Luis Rivera's star has just rocketed through that organization, and there's a real good chance he'll be in the staff. And, of course, that would help smooth over, you know, whatever issues there may be with Latino players. 416-870-0590, *590, 1-888-666-0590. You have the Blue Jays managerial shortlist, and we're asking you a very simple question. Do you like it? Who's not on it? Who would you choose for Blue Jays manager? Marcus in Waterloo, you're on the Fan 590.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Hey, I'd have to choose Brian Butterfield. He's been with the team the longest. He's been working under Cito Gaston, so he's obviously picked up some stuff from him. I think
Only the good stuff, I hope.
Yeah. Do the players like him, or would he not be the best option right now?
Well, I mean, the players love Brian Butterfield, and that might be the problem. And what I mean by that is, I mean, Brian Butterfield, as a defensive coach, works, you know, every day with guys like Aaron Hill, with the infielders. He's the guy who hits ground balls to them. He works with them in their footwork and spring training. He spends a lot of time one-on-one with the players. He is a terrific, terrifically amicable guy. You know, he and my only concern with Brian Butterfield, and as I've said, I have said this on the show, I've written it in the Globe, and I've talked to Brian about it. I don't know if you can carry that like over to respect. In other words, asking Aaron Hill to maybe work on his footwork is one thing. Benching Aaron Hill is another. If you understand what I'm saying.
You think he, like, lacks emotion, basically?
No. No, I would never accuse Brian Butterfield of lacking emotion. And I could tell Blue Jays fans that if Brian Butterfield is manager, there will be some ejections. Let's put it that way. Pat in Toronto, you're on the Fan 590.
Hi, how you doing, Jeff?
Good, Pat.
I would go with a guy like Farrell. And my thoughts is, like, I think you need to revamp the whole coaching staff there in Toronto anyway. Butterfield would be a great choice, but I think that familiarity with the players on the team, I think it would just cause, you know, a bit more problems in the long run. And bringing over a guy like Farrell, who has a winning mentality, who's been watched and looked up to, a guy like Francona. So I think this is a guy that knows how to win, knows how to deal with players, and can take that attitude over to Toronto and help better that team.
And Pat, doesn't it tell you something about, we had Rob Bradford from WEEI on. John Farrell doesn't pursue jobs. John Farrell has turned down opportunities to interview for jobs. It tells you something that the guy went after the Jays job. It tells you something that when the phone call came, he said, yeah, I'm interested. That is the, you know, fundamentally, that is the thing that intrigues me and the thing that I like. Is here is a guy who has been picky. Here is who's turned down jobs. He isn't just a guy willing to take any job, and he wants the Blue Jays job. Now, if I'm a Blue Jays fan, I'm sitting there saying, the Boston Red Sox pitching coach, who everybody likes and is highly touted as a managerial prospect, didn't want to manage a bunch of teams. Now he wants to manage the Blue Jays. If I'm a Blue Jays fan, I'm going, holy cow. I mean, we must have something here. This pitching staff must be as good as we think it is. I think it's an interesting choice. I think it would be an inspired choice if it came about. Lorenzo in Toronto, you're on the Fan 590.
Hey, Jeff, how are you?
Good, sir.
I have to say, I'm on the fence about the three manager prospects without the coaching experience. I'd like to say, where's Joe Torre's name in all of this?
Joe Torre has no interest in coming to Toronto.
He has no interest. He said that?
He has. Yeah, Joe Torre is going to make more money doing what he's going to do this year than he would make managing. Joe Torre makes money. His speaking engagements are legendary. And he's not a, you know, I really think we've seen the last of Joe Torre as a manager. I really do. I think the Dodgers were his last shot, and I think this is the time where he'll step away. I don't believe I could see him possibly coming back to manage the Mets, but I don't see Joe Torre as a guy who's interested in a 2 or 3 year rebuilding process. If he were to come back, he'd come back to win a World Series. And as good as we think this Blue Jays team might be, boy, that's not that. They're not a World Series team right now. Doug in Hamilton, you're on the Fan 590.
Hi, Jeff. How are you?
Good, sir.
Well, I'll tell you two people that are very, very happy this morning, and that is Joe that does the hockey and myself. We are the two only Giant fans that I know of. We feel pretty good. But as far as this Blue Jay thing goes, I kind of like Alomar.
Okay, tell me why.
Well, because he's a baseball player, and he's gone through it from the very, very, you know, I mean, he's got the Latino American thing going.
Yep.
I guess that's very important. He always came to the park to play. He's a student of the game. His name is Alomar.
You talked to people who watched him play. I mean, this guy played his ass off. He was a catcher. He played it. He played hurt very, very often. And I don't know his personality, but, you know, a catcher who'll do that, I think you got to at least give him his props. And I'm glad that the short list looks like this. If this turns out to be the official short list, I think Alex Anthopoulos can be pretty happy with the job he's done.
Nothing is left on the field. Get it all online at fan590.com. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Toronto Sports Radio, the Fan 590.
Welcome back to the Fan 590. I am Jeff Blair. The Raptors should be starting their morning practice in about 10 minutes. At the ACC before jumping on a plane or a train or something and going to Montreal to play an exhibition game tomorrow night, a sold-out exhibition game against the New York Knicks in Montreal. And the mind boggles at the possibility of NBA players in Montreal. I mean, Montreal is an open city. And NBA players in that city? Oh, my God. I don't even... Shea Puri. They may have to build a freaking annex at Shea Puri with NBA players there. I mean, the ballet dancers, they may just be in one room. There may be no point in going there. I mean, can you imagine a city where you'd least want, you know, whatever, 25 NBA players? Oh my God. These guys get in trouble in Portland. And one person who will be on the trip and who I know has taken my restaurant recommendations and my bar recommendations to heart, although he was a little upset, I think, when he found out that the one bar I was recommending had actually closed down in 2005, is the Fan 590's own Eric Smith, Raptors color analyst, and soon to be individual with a night off in Montreal. Mr. Smith, I am envious. And thank you for joining us.
Thank you, and I'm definitely looking forward to it. And then the place you were mentioning, Le Swimming, I had never heard of it, but I'm definitely...
Well, that's why you hadn't heard of it. It was, you know, and again, maybe that tells you, you know, a married guy. You never ask a married guy for bar tips in a city. Because quite often, you know, A, we don't have any and we make them up. Or B, you know, we sort of think back to the last time we were there. Nonetheless, I am sure, I feel reasonably confident in saying... that you will not spend the night in your hotel room.
That's a safe bet. That's absolutely a safe bet, especially if Jack Armstrong is my wingman. I have
no
doubt that we will find some sort of establishment where we can have a little fun.
I will tell you right now, if you go to Hurley's Irish Pub, you may not. We may lose. We may lose Jack Armstrong. You may never see him again.
Well, if the Guinness is cold at Hurley's, I'm sure Jack will do just fine. I think he's conquered many a bar in his day. So
yes.
I think we'll see if he can conquer Hurley's. I would put my money on Jack coming through the night.
Yeah, I would think he'll do fine. One person who I'm not certain I'd put my money on right now is Jose Calderon. Now, okay, I understand it's the preseason. I sat beside you and Jonesy last night to watch the game, and I think, you know, Calderon was not as bad defensively as a lot of people, you know, as a lot of people expected him to be against Derrick Rose, especially in the first half. I mean, he was pretty good, but I mean, his shooting, you can't, the way the NBA is now, you need a lot of offense out of your point guard, and boy, I don't see it from those guys right now. I certainly don't see it from Jose.
Yeah, for Jose Calderon, no doubt, Jeff, has had a very rough preseason to this point in terms of his offense. Ironically, I think defensively he's been okay, and I know that's not saying much for a lot of people.
No, but he has. I think you're absolutely right, and as someone who's criticized him, I think he's been measurably better defensively.
Yeah, and the problem is that usually in the past what you've counted on from Calderon is his offense, and a lot of people, including myself, might say, all right, what you don't get from him defensively, at least he's making up for offensively, because he's been a pretty accurate shooter over the course of his career. He's a guy that can get you 10, 12, even 15 points a night, and especially now in the post-Bosch era, you were probably counting on Calderon to maybe step up and provide some of that offensive firepower that you've lost in the absence of Bosch, and at least so far in the preseason we haven't seen that. And he certainly, overall, if you look at both sides of the ball, offensively and defensively, he's been outplayed by Jarrett Jack to this point. Now, Jose has started 4 of the 7 preseason games. I'm just going on hunch here. I'd expect to see Jarrett Jack tomorrow so that Jay Triano can at least say, hey, I gave each of you 4 starts in the preseason. And ultimately, if this year is supposed to be about, you know, accountability and who's playing the best and guys that earn their minutes and play the best are going to get more minutes, et cetera, then I would say, based on what we've seen in 7 games and not knowing what we'll get tomorrow in Montreal, I wouldn't be surprised if Jarrett Jack is your starting point guard by the time the season starts next week.
Eric Smith, Raptors color voice and Raptors reporter for the Fan 590, joins us on the Fan 590. We all know the story about, you know, the trade that wasn't involving Jose Calderon. I mean, Jose seems like a pretty good guy. He seems like a pretty bright guy. But, you know, whatever he may say and whatever other people may say, do you think that maybe this is bothering him a little bit? The fact that, essentially, it's not that someone tried to make a point to me the other day, well, how can you have a guy you didn't want as your point guard? Well, no, it's not necessarily the Raptors didn't want him. I mean, when you make a trade, you have to give up something to get something. And
right,
the Raptors
right.
were willing to do that. But it's not the same thing as saying they don't want him. However, do you think maybe in the back of Calderon's mind, there's that, you know, that element of doubt that you can't have to be a point guard in the NBA?
To me, there's got to be. If I were to put myself in his shoes, I'd be thinking that way. Now, maybe if I was making $10 million, that would help ease my mind a little bit more. But at the same time, if you kind of look at it and say, Jeff, if the Globe and Mail tries to get rid of you, but then ends up keeping you, but then you're not sure if you're really actually part of the Globe and Mail still or not, or what's going on. I mean, I think that human nature would be, listen, as much as Jay Triano and Brian Colangelo both went to Spain and met with Calderon and tried to, you know, cool things down for him and smooth the waters a little bit. And while I think your assessment is 100% right in terms of having to give up something to get something, I think it's human nature to think, man, were you just trying to get rid of me because you didn't want me? Or was it, a case of we had an opportunity to acquire a starting center who could play alongside Andrea Bargnani, and that comes at the cost of a team that was looking for a starting point guard, and you were that guy. And if anything, you kind of, play the reverse psychology on the guy and say, listen, you might be looking at it that we're getting rid of you, which we're not. We're just trying to acquire something. The other team, though, is saying we want that guy. That's the other side of a trade that guys don't look at when they're being dealt from one team. You're going to a team that clearly wants you. They are trading something they have for you. So clearly Charlotte, at least initially, wanted Jose Calderon and was willing to pay whatever his contract was to bring him in, and at the last second balked at it before Michael Jordan squashed the deal. So that's the other side of the coin, that somebody does want you. It's not always the negative that somebody's trying to get rid of you.
Eric Smith, Raptors color voice and reporter, joins us in the Fan 590. You mentioned Andrea Bargnani. There seemed to be a little more activity and a little more creativity in his game offensively last night. He seemed a little more engaged than in previous games. But defensively, he's still a work in progress, to say the least. And I thought it was really telling that last night, the last thing Jay Triano said in his post-game news conference was, you know, his game... Andrea's game isn't where it needs to be right now. And, you know, for a team that has been preaching and has been selling hustle and, you know, having to work hard and, you know, no one thinks we're going to win, backs against the wall, all this stuff. The one thing I sort of didn't expect to see from anybody was, you know, a slowness in getting their game to where it needs to be. This is, again, preseason, but... you kind of expect to see a guy who's been in the NBA for a while ratchet it up in the last two games, don't you? I mean, we saw that last night with the Bulls. The Bulls ratcheted up their play in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, they really did. And I completely agree with your assessment in terms of Bargnani and the way that he needs to perform. And I mean, I'm not telling any great secret that the spotlight's clearly on him now with Chris Bosh gone. I mean, this is arguably Andrea's team right now. And if it's not Andrea's, well, you know, that could spell bad news for the Raptors overall, because in terms of raw talent, he is probably their most talented offensive player. Defensively, still has some issues at times, and clearly we haven't seen him perform defensively the way he needs to be, and he has struggled with a shot mightily over the course of at least five of the seven preseason games. So he has to raise the level of his game. And I'm not even going to sit here and talk about whether he needs to be a leader on this team and whatnot, because that's probably a different topic for another day. I just believe that guys, you know, you're either born a leader or not, you know, and just because you're the most talented player or you're gifted with certain skills doesn't necessarily mean you're gifted as a leader on a team. So I don't think he even has to be the guy that's rallying the troops on the floor or rallying the troops in the locker room, but he does need to rally the troops with his play, and he needs to rally this team literally sometimes in games with his overall skill set. And we haven't seen that to this point in the preseason. He's got another level in him. The problem for Andre is he's got to find a way to be at that level for 82 games, because the Raptors as a team, let alone him as an individual, can't afford for him to have off nights this season. He needs to be at the top of his game each and every night.
Did you get the sense, Eric, last night that Jay, in his post-game news conference, I got the sense that even for the preseason, there was a little bit of frustration there.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I can't say it surprised me. I mean, you know, we all know the year that this team's facing, but boy, it's kind of telling, don't you think, that you already get that sense?
Unfortunately, yeah, and I hope our assessment is wrong. I hope Triano's assessment is wrong of what he's seeing so far, but I think it's going back to the point that we just made a couple of minutes ago that, you know, this team has talent, but clearly it doesn't have the superstar talent that a lot of other clubs in the East, let alone in the rest of the league overall, has. So if you're going to win on a nightly basis and you're going to even consider yourself in a conversation for a playoff seed, even if it's the last playoff seed, you're going to have to, it sounds like a bad survivor cliche, but you're going to have to outwork, out-hustle, outplay, outwit whatever your opponent each and every night. And, you know, this goes back to, I believe we talked a couple weeks ago, Jeff, about, you know, the Milwaukee Bucks of last year. You look at that team, even if they had a healthy Michael Redd and Andrew Bogut, nobody last year thought that was a playoff team. But what did they do? They worked hard. They kind of adapted the personality of their coach in Scott Skiles and became that type of scrappy, you know, balls-to-the-wall type of team on the floor. And that ultimately earned them a ton of respect around the league, a lot of wins, and a playoff berth without their two best players and with a rookie point guard running the show. So it can be done if you're willing to put in the work and be that kind of team every night. Even if you go back to just under a decade ago when Doc Rivers took over for the Orlando Magic, that was a team that had far less talent than the Raptors even have right now. This was before Tracy McGrady came to town. But you know what? That team scratched and clawed and worked their butts off and made their way, I believe, to 500. And Doc Rivers ended up being the coach of the year that year for the Orlando Magic. You can do it if you play that type of gritty style, but it's got to come every single night, and there's no room for letdown.
Eric Smith, Raptors color voice and reporter, joins us on the Fan 590. Very quickly, Eric, last night Reggie Evans took another tee, and I don't know if it was respect for the game foul or not, but we've seen those. This is really this really has the possibility of becoming an issue with some of the players, doesn't it? Because, I mean, I noticed a couple of times this preseason when it's been called, I mean, the players are reacting, like just almost, they're almost incredulous.
Yeah, and the problem is, I want to see this call during the regular season against Kobe Bryant.
Against the Miami Heat.
Exactly. I want to see LeBron and Wade and Bosh and Kobe and Kevin Durant and all these guys. I want to see these superstars get the same kind of treatment, because if you can't even look at an official with your palms to the air and go, what? Really? I mean, if you're looking at the guy and air punching and you're showing some sort of violent signal towards him, or you're dropping F-bombs or something, okay, fine, you want to tee a guy up, I'm okay with that. But if you can't even look in the direction of an official or raise your eyebrow without any kind of warning, and you're just going to be slapped with a tee and a tee equaling $2,000, I mean, come on. It's gotten – I'll tell you the other thing, too, which I find humorous, and where we were sitting last night, Jeff, right beside each other, you know, you can hear everything that's going on the floor.
Right.
And even on the visitor side. It's funny to me that a player can't react to an official, again, just kind of palms to the air, shrugging the shoulders, going, really? What? And he's going to get teed up for that. Meanwhile, coaches are dropping every other word.
And they're running up to the officials to say it. That's the other thing.
But the coaches are getting away with it. So what about the respect for the game from the coaches? So it just seems like a rule that has been maybe put into place a little bit too quickly. There's sort of the rush to judgment on this one. And maybe they've got to ease back on this a little bit. And if they're not going to ease back, then I go back to what I said originally. You better make sure you call that to the book for every player, whether the 15th guy on the roster or the superstar player.
Eric, we appreciate your time. Have a safe trip to Montreal and enjoy yourself. I'm sure you will.
Thanks, Jeff. Take care.
That is Eric Smith, Fan 590 Raptors reporter and color voice.